thank you for taking the time to talk to me. I'm Margo from the Colorado Sound.
A pleasure. What town are you in?
The station itself is in Greeley, but the station is Denver, Fort Collins, along the Front Range. And we're presenting your show.
Is Greeley named after Horace Greeley by any chance?
Yes, it is.
No kidding. I used to work at Mary Greeley Hospital in Ames. That guy left quite a thumbprint.
Yeah. And Greeley actually has started to look back to its past to kind of reimagine their future. Because it's basically a cattle town. And and so they're doing a lot of living history things and kind of touting that Horace Greeley connection more.
Interesting. I'll look into it when I'm there. I'm like, we're so excited to get back on the road. It's like sort of, it feels like I don't know. Normally you start to take it for granted when you live that way for 20 years, you know, and then for a year and a half, haven't gone anywhere. So I'm pretty excited to see things and learn things.
Well, I know. And actually, you know, it's funny when it was confirmed that I was going to talk to you, I put something on our social media last night and said, hey, I'm talking to John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats. Do you have a question, anything you're dying to know? And the one question I got was from someone asking you about touring. and is there any, this is his question. It comes from Scott Maxwell. And he says, is there any song you have recorded you haven't played live? And I'm going to put the caveat on prior to 2020.
I mean, there's a bunch that have never been played live. I always feel like there's some that you know, that they don't need to be played live. they exist as recordings. I'm just trying to think in my head. I'm not in front of a computer, so I can't cheat. Because I'm assuming there's a number from the early tapes that have never been played live. And I'm guessing there's one, what's the name of it? There's one on the Coroner's Gambit that's played in an open tuning that mentions a Leanne Rimes song. Only it turns out to not be Leanne Rimes, it was Lila Camp. But I remember this one that has this drony open tuning that would be kind of like a vicious song if I knew the tuning, but I don't. So there's that one I haven't played a lot of. There's a number. I think there might even be one on Tallahassee that we haven't ever gotten done live, but I'm not sure. There's a bunch, yeah.
Okay, well then Scott has a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, no, I always do. This is something I do take note of when we're going out. Is like, is there a fair? You know, you should always be breaking in new ones. You should not just be doing what you've already, you know, shown yourself capable of doing.
Well, you've got many years to choose from, so that's kind of cool. Yeah. You have so many options. So when is the date you're back on the road? I know because you are coming here. You've got a couple of shows. You've got the show in Fort Collins on the 21st, and I believe you're at the Gothic Theater on a couple days before that. But I'm assuming you're not starting your tour in Colorado.
No, the tour starts in Asheville, North Carolina, on the 6th of August, which is like very soon. And prior to that, we're meeting up to rehearse. Earlier in the week, we're going to meet up and get together, and we're all rehearsing by ourselves, probably daily. But we got to get together and play them. And sort of do blocking, you know, figure out how it looks on stage and where we all stand and stuff like that. So play for a couple of days, rest for a day, and then get on the bus on the night of the 5th.
Oh, that is so cool. You must be excited.
We are excited. I'm also a little nervous. I don't sleep well on the bus, and that causes my mental health to sort of downward spiral. But I've slept in my own bed for a year and a half. Being stuck at home for a year and a half wasn't great. But sleeping well is you know, it's like, it's one of life's riches, right? So I'm every day I'm like trying to plot how can I somehow hack the bus environment for myself to make myself able to sleep. So keep your fingers crossed.
All right. But does running help with that? Does that like tire you out?
Well, we'll find out. I wasn't up to distance when I was last touring. My longest run would have been just under 5K. And since then, I ran 7 miles this morning and a half marathon day before yesterday. So we'll see. I mean, I'm in the best shape I've ever been in my life. So I think that probably also informs my better sleep. I'm hoping so. I mean, the bus it's loud. It's a very loud sound to be in a bus. But some of this also goes with performing. That like every night, you know, my, what I do takes me to a place of real ecstasy. You know, it's like, I get extraordinarily excited every night. It takes a long time to ramp down from that kind of excitement, a couple hours, you know, I mean, you're really tired, but you also sort of have to, it's sort of like Christmas, you know, when you're a kid, it's like, you get so excited, you can't go to sleep. Right. Well, I have that every night. I mean, the thing is, like, there's way worse problems to have, but it's one of the things that, like, I'm having some nervousness. It's like, I don't want to sleep badly. It's like, I would really like to maintain this practice of sleeping 5 to 6 hours a night. That'd be great. So I'm thinking about that a lot.
Yeah, I sleep next to somebody who snores a lot, and he.
Oh man.
Yeah, and we, you know, so I get it that good sleep is like imperative, especially when you. I think we're about the same age. You get to be a certain age, you're like, oh my god, I'd give anything for a good night's sleep.
Yeah, when you get to be a person, here's the thing: if you do get it, last night I slept really well, like really well, and when you wake up, you think, oh my god. There's a lot I would give to do that two nights in a row. It's like, it's really, I mean, it's very hard to explain to people who are a little bit younger that, like, no, that's a gigantic blessing in this world to get a full night's sleep.
It is. And you know, that has been the thing about 2020. I mean, there was a lot of it that just sucked, and we don't need to go over that, but there have been some things that, you know, I kind of lost along the way. And I'm wondering if that was the same for you. I mean, yeah, you got to spend time with your family and your, you know,
sure.
Catch up on books. I mean,
it was all wrapped up in weird ways. Cause like, to be home with the family was great, but the family included kids who were having to go to school on Zoom, which was terrible, right? Just the worst. My poor son, my younger son, his whole kindergarten year practically was looking at a screen. And the teacher's doing the best they can, but they're also showing these videos that the sound is so bad. It sounds like this distorted. And this is really like, it's not what you want your child's kindergarten experience to be, you know?
Right.
And so, but at the same time, we're getting to be together all the time. And it's really great. You know, we're getting to know each other really well. And I got to spend my son's entire sixth year with him. And that's great. That wasn't going to happen that way. And I was thinking of it the other day, how, when it was real lockdown at first, I would go out on the street in the morning and there'd be no cars, you know, it would just be these quiet streets. Oh, that was pretty nice. It was also a little scary. Like, it also means, oh, people aren't going to work. People are hiding in their homes, you know, so that's not a great vibe, but the quiet streets are a great vibe. So there was a lot. I mean, I think about this with sadness because the whole thing, the entire pandemic posed a challenge to us about whether we would like to live in a different way, you know, that's maybe thinking about one another more and maybe thinking about whether there's ways that we live that aren't good for us. However, maybe we had some idle thoughts about that, but is it going to result in any collective action by us? Probably not. At least Americans aren't really built that way.
I find myself slowly sliding back into it because I went to work the whole time because I didn't really have a way to do my radio show remotely. And we're a very small staff here and it's public radio. So, you know, all those things. And we did the distancing and knock wood, nobody here got sick. But I still find myself sliding back into like some of the ways and tenseness that I had before that I had vowed I was not going to do.
No, it's a really hippie thing to say, but like, you know, there was a slowness to that early lockdown that like, you know, if you could experience that and not be in a state of fearing a pandemic, you know, then your life might feel a little more nourishing. You know, it's like, it might be, you know, more pleasant for us to slow down a little, you know, but saying that to Americans is like, telling Americans not to think so much about money. It's like,
it's true.
We don't want to hear it. Right.
So last year though, and that brings up another point last year. I mean, you guys had gone in the studio. Apparently you were doing a tour of all the studios of the South, but the legendary Southern studios, but you kind of had to change your plans for what you were doing on the fly with the band.
Oh, yeah.
And so you made a very adept change and went, okay, aha, I'm going to do this. I'm going to record this album. Proceeds will go to the band and the crew. And then we'll do what we can when we can after.
Yeah, no, it was very, it was fluid. Cause like we were in Memphis March 1st through 6th, I think. And then we drove on the 7th, I think that's right, down to Muscle Shoals and started working on Darken Here on the 8th. And it was during that week of the 8th through the 15th or 16th, right around there, that things really started to escalate. You know, that was when they canceled South by Southwest. And shortly after I got home, like by the end of the week in Memphis, it was clear to me that I didn't want to get on an airplane. So, yes. You know, whereas I had a flight home, you know, I had actually, you know, I'd used some points to upgrade. I was like, oh, I'll fly first class out of Birmingham, you know. and instead it was like, nah, I'm not getting on a plane. Me and Matt Douglas, you know, sort of road dogged it home in a rental van. And even then, stopping at gas stations was weird. Everything, you know, it's like the feeling was bizarre. And but I had already had an idea for a new group of songs while I was in studio, which I assumed I would like sort of that idea would go into a notebook and maybe I'd come back to it, maybe I wouldn't. But it was so clear after a day or two at home, it's like, oh no, everything's about to get weird. So I just started working on new songs. And I thought, well, maybe I'll do one a day, you know, and 10 days later I had the tape.
Was it kind of cool going back to the way you originally had done things?
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I the thing is, like, I really did enjoy that. I like working quickly. I like getting stuff out there quickly. You know, that's a fun thing for me. The old way had this virtue of immediacy. I mean, that was a big part of what the Mountain Goats were all about up until about 2002, was like, what you're hearing is closer to the moment of inspiration than you can really get from almost anybody else, right? That, you know, you're hearing the song just as it comes together, right? The take you get is the first time I play it really well, you know? Whereas in the studio, what you're doing is considerably more baroque. You're trying to put together something. You know, and there's plenty of spontaneity, like the end of that song, Lizard Suit on Dark In Here. That's, you know, we did a bunch of takes of that, and every one of them is different. Right? But you're trying to sculpt something, and you're having to account for the variables of other musicians playing with each other, you know. Whereas when it's me and the thing, it really is trying to get that moment of conception, you know. And it's a sort of, you know, by the time I did All Hail West Texas, I sort of felt like I'd taken that as far as I wanted to go with it. But it was really a joy to sort of be back in that zone again. There's a song on the tape called Until Olympias Returns that really has that sort of, like, you can hear, I'm very excited to be playing an up-tempo song. And the excitement sort of crackles through the tape, you know. So, and that was the virtue of that older style. And it was super fun.
Oh, that is so awesome. See, now, you know, now that I know that, I get to listen to it in a different way. And that is the cool part. So I'm going to listen for that kind of, because, you know, you pick things up, but you don't pick things up after they've been differently than when they've been explained. So that'll be fun to give it a listen.
No, a little context is always, I won't say always, but a little context is usually a good thing.
Yeah, a little. Trust me, yeah. So I did, before I forget, I want to congratulate you on the success of Darken Here. That I saw the post that you guys had on your social media about, you know, basically every major chart you're charting, and that is amazing. That's kind
Thank
of
you.
Cool validation.
It's completely awesome. It's also, it's funny. When we made the two albums, my assumption was that the one that was going to land harder among listeners was the first one, right? Which people liked, you know, but like the response to Darken, I thought Darken Here was going to be kind of polarizing because it's a much slower record. You know, it's got one big up-tempo number and the rest of it is either mid or down. It's sort of a dug-in kind of record, you know. But people really popped for it very quickly. And when we put out, like, this is the thing, like, the label was the one who said, well, let's put out the Slow Parts on Death Metal albums as one of the lead tracks. I was like, wow, so like leading with something that's slow and expansive, I don't know. And they said, no, we like this one. So, okay, cool. And people really, I feel like people maybe are in the mood for something that allows you to sort of sink into it, you know. And that's what, you know, both Matt's recording, Matt Ross Spang's recording in Fame, and Shani Gandhi, who's on mix for this record, she sort of specializes in making an immersive environment out of a track, and she did an absolute spectacular, you know, job of that on this one. So yeah, it's I mean, I'm honored. It's really, it's really a treat 20 some years into your career to be doing better numbers than you've ever done. We're humbled.
Well, it's well deserved, and I would argue long overdue, because
you're kind to say so.
Seriously, when as an old goth chick a couple years ago, I was very excited about the goth oriented album. But
you would like I have some soaps that I bought off of Instagram. You know, there's a whole sort of subculture of people selling soaps and stuff, or not subculture, but there's a market of people selling homemade soaps and stuff on Instagram. And I found one whose zone was gothy stuff. So I have a nice smelling soap called Spellbound. after the Susie song. Yeah.
That's so cool.
You know, this is totally off topic, but like I covered, which Susie song was it? It was from when that first guitarist was with them early on. Maybe it was Spellbound actually. And those songs are super interesting. I mean, when we were listening to music back then, it was so much about the scene, you know, and the vibe.
Right.
You didn't really slow down to listen to what was going on musically or to consider, like as in the case also of Bauhaus, like, oh, these are very interesting musicians making some very interesting aesthetic choices. Well, those aren't even terms that are available to you as a 19-year-old goth. You're just thinking, yeah, it sounds dark and wicked, right? So, but you go back and listen, you go, oh, wow, Bauhaus was listening to a lot of dub reggae. That's how Bela Lugosi's Dead sounds the way it does, right? Is like, yes. They listen to dub records and go, oh, what if we do this? And with Susie, I mean, the musicianship on those early records is like really, it's quite remarkable. And I wound up researching and found out that Jimmy Page was a fan of that guitarist. He was like, oh, that guy's really good. So, I mean, to me, that's like, there's so many other ways of looking at that music. But I think for those of us who were in it at the time, it was like, no, it's more about lifestyle and self-identification than it was about sort of aesthetics, which is, or musical aesthetics. Kind of like. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, no, and it is interesting because a lot of that early, not just goth, but the whole post-punk movement, a lot of that was written off like, oh, you know, they're not very musical or whatever. But you can you can find great musicality in even the no wave movement. I mean, like, if you listen to that, that's jazz.
Oh yeah, no, a lot of those downtown no wave guys are amazing, and like, and bands like China Crisis is one that I don't remember hearing back then, but from the immediate post-punk period, who I went and looked into, and they're sort of like a mini Steely Dan, like very interesting songs, super interesting structures. So many bands like that were sort of hard to pigeonhole, so they didn't wind up finding a niche, you know, but there's a pretty fertile time in music, yeah.
Yeah, because working with Fire and Steel sounds nothing like the rest of China Crisis's work. You know, and
that's right. No.
That's the song everyone knows, if they know it.
Yeah, but they have so many other, they had plenty of looks, which is sort of like, you know, artistically very satisfying, but I think the bands who go on to the most success are the ones who, at least on an album-by-album basis, you can say, here's exactly what this album is like, and you can compare it to some other albums so people have a sort of a hook to grab onto. I think, you know, being, if you're going to be sort of harder to pin down, you have to be playing the very long game. You know, you have
right.
to be sticking around until the people who are into that find you. Yeah.
I'm sure you're busy, but I got one more question for you, because you brought up an interesting point about how you had covered a Susie and the Banshees song, and you've noticed there are a lot of tribute albums coming out, and all of last year was basically a bunch of cover songs. By the way, your the Mountain Goats cover of Summer is excellent.
Oh, thank you. I give Matt Douglas most of the credit for that. I mean, I'm proud of what we all did, but Matt's the guy doing the entirety of the woodwinds arrangement, and I'm so fond of that. I mean, like, War is such a great band. They're like one of the finest catalog bands there is, but that was like, we're proud of that, and hardly anybody even noticed it. So thank you very much.
No, I have a feature called Bring to a Boil and Cover that I do every day at 2:00. And when I heard your version of Summer, it was winter and I didn't care. You know, it's Colorado, so it's winter for a long time. I'm putting this on. I don't care. I really like it. But
thank you so much. Seriously, we're so proud of that cover. It pretty much bubbled over without much notice. And we were like, what if we could just make music like this?
Well, we noticed here at the Colorado Sound, we actually play it. So
awesome. Thank you.
So my question is, with this plethora of like tribute albums out there, Are there any dream tribute albums you would want to be a part of?
I mean, it is hard to say because so much of the music I listen to is music that I myself can't play. You know, like I listen to a lot of very technical jazz and technical heavy metal. And then I'm really into this Turkish singer named Zeynep Bostik right now. Well, uh-huh. I mean, she's great, but I don't really know Turkish, so I can't do her. I think maybe like Earth, Wind and Fire, you know, is one of the best bands of the 70s. And one of the sort of single moments of my touring life was meeting a band, my friend John Lindemann, Matt Datesman, Tobin, three guys in a band called True Love Always, who were on Teen Beat in the 90s. And we met at a festival in Tallahassee. And they opened with a September song, right? With September by Earth, Wind and Fire, right?
And, oh, yeah.
And I hadn't really thought of that song in several years. I was like, wow, this is a jam, you know? And I went back and started digging deep in Earth, Wind and Fire. I was like, oh my God, these are some of the best records you're ever going to hear, you know? And so EWF, they're one of those bands who, like, if you play their greatest hits, you're stunned by just how many great, great, great tunes they have. It's like they're one of the all-time great runs. So that would be fun. And plus I have Matt to do horns. So yeah, if somebody was doing Earth, Wind and Fire tribute record, I'd do Serpentine Fire or something like that. That would be great.
Oh my God, that song would be awesome to do.
Yeah, that'd be a really. Those are songs. They're one of the most universal bands. It's like you could test somebody and it's like play it, and if you're not grooving to that, I don't know what happened to you.
Right.
It's irresistible music, and sonically. Those records are some of the best sounding records of their era. They sound fantastic. The horns are so warm. You know, the snap of the drum is so good. And they're a super interesting band. They're like War from early on. They start sort of as a much more loose-knit sort of thing, and they tighten up and become popular later. But both of those bands have deep catalogs with bunches of stuff to explore.
It's interesting that both of those bands that we've been talking about, War and Earth, Wind & Fire, they were a lot more funk-oriented when they started.
Yes. Yeah. No, they become poppier. I mean, speaking of covers, though, Earth, Wind & Fire's version of Got to Get You Into My Life is one of the most,
so
one of the
good.
Best covers ever done, right? Where they really take the song and they say, well, there's no point in trying to do it like the Beatles did it, but he already thinks the Beatles are the best. So we have to do it in a way that puts our stamp on it. And like that horn arrangement, it's just so perfect, you know?
It was
so,
the best
but yeah,
thing.
No, they... Go ahead.
I was going to say it was the best thing about that awful Sgt. Pepper movie, by
I
far.
I never did see it. I still haven't seen it. Although I was remembering the movies, there were a lot of movies like that in those days. I mean, that was obviously the big budget train wreck one, but there was like movies like Car Wash and Thank God It's Friday. And my friends and
oh
I
my God, Thank God It's
them.
Friday!
Yeah. Thank God It's Friday was the one that had Donna Summer in it. Who else was in
wasn't
that one?
Meatloaf
was
in it? Was Meatloaf in it?
No, Meatloaf was in a movie called Roadie.
That's right. That's right.
They also had Deborah Harry, I think, was also in that one. Those rock movies, it's like the thing is, like, that was a good way to get a sixth grader into the theater because there was no way of seeing the people you were interested in seeing on TV normally, except for on Friday and Saturday night. You could watch Don Kirsch's rock concert or Midnight Special, right?
Yes.
And you could watch Soul Train on Saturday mornings, and you could see some bands that way. But otherwise, you never got to see them. So with a movie like this, you go see a bunch of them in a row, and the movies were always just the absolute unfollowable plots, right? I remember the poster for Thank God It's Friday sort of tried to sketch all of the characters, and you go, okay, I'll see this movie, and the characters on screen are not even half that drawn out. it feels like a badly improvised piece.
Yes. And now I have something to do this weekend. I'm going to rewatch all those awful movies.
What is there? There's Car Wash and there's Thank God It's Friday. And there were several others. Car Wash, the music in Car Wash is fantastic. That's some of the best disco around. You know, that's Rose Royce, really, really. Rose Royce, another disco band with a pretty deep catalog for bands that age, worth looking up. And I
yes.
can't remember the Silvers. I feel like the Silvers are on that soundtrack. I could be wrong, but they were really good too.
Silvers with a Y.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Silvers who had Hotline was their big hit when I was very small, when I was like 9 or 10.
Yeah, it sounds like we had the same experience listening to the radio growing up and watching the same movies.
Did you grow up in Colorado, or are you from?
Oh no, I'm from Michigan. So I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. At first, I was on Great Lakes Naval Base because my dad was a physician whose number came up during the Vietnam War, and they took him after his internship and residency. So we lived there for a couple of years. So I had the whole North Chicago experience of 70s radio.
Oh, totally. That's the golden age.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, being on the playground with Mark Ling and Sheila Carruthers, and we were singing Redbone at the top of our lungs, you know, come and get
yeah,
you.
Yeah. 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 Is Grand Rapids where Judy Garland is from?
No, that's Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Green has spent time in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And also
Well, you know, his organist was on Getting Into Knives, our last record. We had Al Green's organist playing with us.
That's amazing. What is that like to look at somebody and they're like just a person in the studio with you, but they're steeped in history?
Well, Charles is like, he's a minister now. And he's a really nice guy. I mean, the thing is, you don't become a guy people are reaching out to play on the track at, you know, late in your age, unless people are like, oh, he's great. He's a fun guy to hang with. So it's like the nice guys do finish first. Like in the end, it's like they're the ones who are still getting calls when they're in the 70s. And so he was great to hang out with, you know, and he came in and Matt Ross Spang said, you know, if Charles is feeling it, he'll play you those songs. And so he said, hey, you want to play us some of the tunes you used to play out with Reverend Al? I said, oh, sure. And he sat down and played us Love and Happiness.
Oh my God.
And Take Me to the River. I mean, solo, unaccompanied on Hammond. And I'll tell you something. That is something to hear. Like the actual guy who dialed in the tone on the original record sits down at the Hammond and there it is. And you realize what a giant piece of the picture that sound was to hear, you know, Call Me or whatever. And, you know, it was awesome. It's really
that
awesome.
That is amazing. And I would have been in tears. That is amazing.
Oh, we were all just sitting there in the control room, just big old grins. Everybody's got their phones out. And he's played, it wasn't a medley. He played the song all the way through. And you realize, you know, a lot of the time when you have a guest musician, you pick spots for them. You know, we'll have him here. But that organ runs through the entire song. It heralds the tune and it plays all the way through. And then on the new one, you know, we had Spooner Oldham and Will McFarlane, who are also just total ringers. They're fun to play with.
Did you, I mean, think about that 20 years ago when you started out with a cassette and a boombox, and now you're in studio with like some absolute legends. I mean,
no, I did.
What a trajectory.
I would have told you were nuts if you'd have told me. Like, no, not this. And it was, the thing is, I'm proud that, you know, it's still kind of weird because I remember when we were playing with Charles in Memphis and he says, well, what's next? I said, well, the next one is called Getting Into Knives. And he says, Getting Into Knives? we kept it weird.
John, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I can't wait till you guys stop in Fort Collins and I could see you on the 21st. This is...
Yeah, we're like I say, I'm scared about the sleep, but we're pretty excited to get back out there.
Yeah, well, and if I can find any information on like the history of Greeley to send your way, I'll do so.
All right, do it. I will see you out there.
All right, John, you take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.